This is Diana Cordy with Book Talk. My guest is Alan Tennant, author of On the Wing, To the Edge of the Earth with the Peregrine Falcon. Of all birds to follow, why Amelia and why in that old Cessna?
Well, the answer to both is she was the only falcon we had, and the Cessna was the only plane we had. Actually, my pilot, George Vos, is an old World War II flight instructor and longtime seat-of-the-pants aviator, wonderful guy, was tracking these birds for the Army, and they only were going on little short 50-mile or so hops. And I flew with him one day, and it just occurred to me, you know, what if we went on? What if we could follow these things further, more than just a little ways and then back to the coast? And he didn't think much of me. He thought I was sort of a bird nut and a you know, wacko ornithology buff. But the challenge of flying was what really drew him. And at one point, we had a number of different falcons we tried. It took us a long time to learn how to do it, we had these little radio transmitters, just not much bigger than an aspirin tablet, that would get on the birds, and other people would get on the birds, too. And so we followed them and lost them and followed them and lost them, and we didn't realize that they would fly right into dense fog banks that you couldn't begin to see through, and we couldn't do that, and over military bases that they would chase us off of. And it took a long time before we were able to finally stick with one, but she was Amelia, named for George's heroine, Amelia Earhart, the ultimate long-distance flyer.
Oh, yes.
So that's why Amelia, and that's why the plane, which was the only plane we had.
Where were you?
Well, it started out down on the Texas coast, on the barrier islands off the coast, where these falcons migrate on their way north from the tropics. Nobody knew at the time really where they were in the tropics, but they show up on these Texas barrier islands, and then they go north to the Arctic. They're tundra falcons. They nest right in the northern rim of the country, but nobody had ever gone all the way north to where they live before, or even most of the way, and it was just, I mean, we're not ornithologists, we're not scientists. It was just a mesmerizing dream that we kind of got obsessed with.
Well, obviously you're a keen observer. How long did it take?
Well, we did it over a number of different seasons. This is a bit of a condensation, but the birds go north, the falcons go north pretty fast. We would sort of swing S's behind them. And
how fast is fast?
Well, they go 50 or 60 miles an hour, and we'd have to go back and forth. But they ultimately ended up, Amelia outflew the plane, because we'd have to fly off and get on the ground, get gas. And, of course, these little rural airports, you know, the people are saying, come on in, sit down, tell us where you're going. We're throwing money on the counter, you know, trying to get gas quick, get back in the air. And at night, she'd fly on way into the night. And then we'd have to find a little airport and get down. You can live for a long period of time on candy bars and Coke machine fare, and then get back up in the air before she left in the morning. And at one point, we lost her all the way. We came right over Boulder, as a matter of fact. But we lost her. And then we found her again at 4 o'clock in the morning over Douglas, Wyoming, coming up the prairie. We'd overflown her, and there we picked up her signal, and that was a wonderful day. Then she went into Canada, and we would lose her if she was going into Canada, so we had to fly into Canada illegally. I told George it was okay, which was not true, and then immediately the Mounties got us.
How did they get you?
They came and arrested us. We were on the ground.
When you were on the ground?
Yeah. But they're not, you know, you think they're going to be wearing these red coats and stovepipe, you know, Nelson Eddy outfits.
They didn't?
They got on khakis. They sneak up on you. And they arrested us. And they were going to put us in their little jail there, which was where they put bears, you know, in this culvert with bars on it. And we thought we were going to be subjected to bear dung torture. But the Mounties were the nicest guys you ever saw. Once they had realized what we were doing and we gave them our story, they felt real bad for having interfered. And they took a collection up, gave us money to help us go north.
Is that right?
They were the nicest guys you could imagine.
Now, didn't you run into some other cops?
Oh, all along. You know, we've been made off with the researchers' equipment down there on the Texas coast that we borrowed for an indefinite period, that Army equipment. And then in Mexico, we had this. We're flying south now after the young ones headed south, and we had this radio-equipped airplane and inadvertently landed it on a Mexican military base. So they knew we were spies. And I'd had these cards made up that said we were renowned bird scientists and should be treated with given help and treated with all due respect. And here we're, you know, backed up with carbines at us, and I'm giving out these cards that say we should be treated with all due respect. But we also landed on a drug smuggler's airstrip, and he held us. That was a really scary one because he just about was, he was either going to kill us or not. And so that was a tight
spot. How'd you get out of it?
Well, we got out of that because he didn't know what to do. He tried to get the plane moved. This was just this peasant guy who was guarding the airstrip, but he had all kinds of armament. And he got in the airplane, and he couldn't move it. And the airplane, big, bright orange and white plane, not big, but big for that little tiny airstrip, sitting on the strip was more of an attraction than letting us go would be. So after a long time of being held at gunpoint, he finally let us take off, and we got out of there.
Tell us about your shirt.
Well, now this is a genuine Texas Highway Patrol shirt and pants that I bought when we weren't able to get papers to go into Mexico, and our lawyer finally gave up to radio track into Mexico and said, look, everybody in Mexico has a uniform. The street sweepers got, everybody has a uniform as part of their pay. And I thought, good idea. You know, this is when Mae West was going to invite Gary Cooper up to see her sometime, and my little chickadee, she said, I always liked a man in uniform. And we thought we'd benefit from the same sartorial advantage, but it turned out that the Falcons, or the secret police, and the Chiclet kids ran from us, and people would come up and give us tips on where to find our bird. That is our, you know, dope places, and we were assumed to be DEA, which is all kind of funny, but then it got us into some real scrapes as well.
What countries were you in Central America?
We went into Mexico, Guatemala, and into Belize. And in Belize, we got a whole lot of adventures down there. You have to read the book to see. We got in the middle of the jump jets that were patrolling down there. And
what's a jump jet?
British jungle fighter jets that were all over the country. And we're flying through the middle of them with no radar transponders. They can't see us, and they're whizzing by. We had a lot of adventures in Belize.
Would you do it again?
Well, I don't know. I don't think we'd have done it the first time if we'd known what was going to happen. We got way over our heads and a lot of close calls. But George really got hooked into it as time went on. And finally, when some of the birds went out over the Caribbean, straight into the Caribbean, George was willing to wedge a 50-gallon drum, which we didn't do or we would have died, a 50-gallon drum of gas in the back seat and pump it with a hand pump into the, into the fuel tank. So he really got into it even further than I did.
Had you always thought you'd write a book?
No, gosh. I was just, you know, from halfway through, we were just trying to survive and get home. We didn't, the book was the furthest thing from our minds.
What was the most important part of the story?
Oh, just that being able to go for weeks on end with something that migrated all the way across the continents up in a world that is completely cut off from the world of man, seeing what they saw, feeling what they felt. We knew the satellites would come and you could plot data points, but we wanted to do it with them. And it's been optioned for film now. We didn't
right. That. So is Robert Redford going to be you or the other guy?
Oh, I don't know if it'll be any of them, but he's got the option on it. It'll be George, not me, certainly. Yeah. And there's a script, and maybe it'll happen.
Yeah, maybe it'll happen. Well, one of your other books is called Snakes of North America.
A whole other life.
600 pages. And who helped you do the research for that?
A lot of people contributed. You know, nobody can go all over the whole country, so I had tons of people that gave their observations and sent pictures, and it was sort of a giant collaborative effort among lots of herp buffs all the way over the country. And then I went around and checked on much of it too, and it took years to do. So I did
600 pages about snakes, I'm sure.
Well, there's a lot of snakes. Mm-hmm. But that was interesting too, but there wasn't as much adventure in that. That was more of a research deal.
Tell us about your website.
Well, I've got a website for this book called alantennant.com, alantennant.com, and anyone can contact me, and we'll chat about the book or peregrines or the enormous environmental impacts that are still hitting them all along the way and affect us too.
Thank you. My guest is Alan Tennant, author of On the Wing, published by Knopf. This is Diana Cordy with Book Talk.